This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When it comes to what happened in New York back in the spring of 2020, if we were to have another pandemic tomorrow, how would our current leaders handle it? This was a catastrophic event that has never been given a thorough post-mortem to evaluate and dissect decisions made by the highest levels of government. When you look back at the worst disasters our country has been through, like 9/11 or Hurricane Katrina, there were studies, after-action reviews, hearings, and investigations to reflect on them and learn from them. A few weeks ago, New Jersey released the first and only independent review that has been conducted in any state. It's over 900 pages and documents the many mistakes that were made, suggesting that lives were lost because of a lack of preparation. Paul Zubik, a former federal prosecutor, was the one given this enormous and important project and went into detail about New Jersey's response. One of the sections that I was interested in was how their administration handled sick patients being admitted into nursing homes. Like New York, New Jersey also had a similar executive order that decided to crowd care facilities with people that were diagnosed with COVID-19. The report found that these homes, including ones that were residences of veterans, were, quote, a profile in incompetence that allowed the virus to spread uncontrollably in the earliest days of the pandemic and kill at least 200 residents. The investigation also detailed the facilities that were mismanaged and had negligence and dysfunction at multiple levels, combined with inadequate training, insufficient infection control measures, and long-standing staff shortages, helping to contribute to one of the highest nursing home death tolls in the U.S. My guest today is someone that very much wants a pandemic study here in New York to happen and has been advocating on behalf of families like mine to have that thorough investigation that highlights all of the decisions that were made during the pandemic. And I am grateful for her support. Please welcome Assembly Member for District 34, Queens, New York, Jessica Gonzalez Rojas. Assembly Member Gonzalez Rojas, thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Janice, for having me.
I just want to say I'm so appreciative of you and your voice. You and I, you know, we haven't talked, but we've followed each other on social media. We've retweeted each other. You have been very supportive in the fight for accountability and answers when it comes to what happened during the pandemic to our loved ones who were in nursing homes. And so I thank you for that. I've always wanted this to be a bipartisan fight. And with people like you, I feel grateful. You, Ron Kim, there are other members of your party who I'm so grateful for, you know, for standing up for what's right. So I thank you for your courage, first of all.
Thank you. Yeah, and I appreciate all your work in highlighting some of the, you know, worst atrocities that happened during the pandemic. It's really important to tell these stories.
Tell me about, let's go back to 2020, what was happening in your community?
Well, Jackson Heights, East Elmhurst, Corona, Elmhurst, we were literally the epicenter of the epicenter. In fact, about 4 years to the day was when the news broke that there were lines wrapped around Elmhurst Hospital, and we had already lost, I think, thousands of people. And people in my neighborhood, which is a working class, low-income, immigrant-rich community of people who are largely excluded from the health system, who are being hit hardest by the pandemic. So it was really tragic to witness, again, these lines wrapped around Elmhurst Hospital that became the epicenter of the epicenter. I also represent a lot of nurses and health staff, and they were out there putting their lives on the line every day. And I think it's really critical that we take a look back back and ensure that this never happens again and that we're adequately prepared for hopefully, you know, never the next pandemic, but we must be ready in the case that something else happens that to the scale of COVID-19.
Mm-hmm. New Jersey put out a report just a couple of weeks ago. It was 900 pages, but it was a critical assessment of what happened. And I actually, hats off, you know, to the governor there, who mm-hmm. I don't necessarily agree with on a lot of policies. You know, he was one of the ones as well that put COVID positive patients into nursing homes. But, you know, he wanted to have that report to look back on. And I believe New Jersey is the only one that has done that. I think it's a yes. really important step forward. Tell me about your bill and tell me what we have to do to get this passed.
Yeah, and just to underscore the harm that hit New York, I think from our estimates, it looks like over 80,000 New
yes.
Yorkers have died from the pandemic, and obviously one of the most deadliest events in our history. So, you know, New Jersey did a really important thing by creating this look back report. And, you know, our governor, Kathy Hochul, who was not the governor during the time of the height of the pandemic, she has commissioned a firm to do a look back, but it doesn't have the same teeth that my bill would have. So essentially, my bill would create a COVID-19 pandemic study commission. It would have 16 members. 8, including the chair, would be appointed by the governor. 3 would be appointed by the Senate and Assembly majority leaders. 1 each appointed by the Senate and Assembly minority leaders, which again makes this a very bipartisan effort. The Department of Health and the Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Services will have non-voting members. And the goal is to select individuals who have a real expertise on public health and understand health equities and inequities. So they have to consult county health commissioners, the New York Commissioner of Health and Mental Hygiene, local health officers, deans of schools of public health to solicit recommendations for appointments. We want this to be a very scientific study that allows for to pull records, to subpoena people. Mm. And the subpoena power is very important because it compels people to come forward. Again, this is an administration that many of their members are no longer there. And, you know, obviously Cuomo is no longer in office and many of his top officials are no longer in office. So through the Olson Group effort that is being done right now under the governor's watch, they don't have the subpoena power that my bill would empower this commission to utilize to ensure that we're getting these important records, documents, and witnesses and testimony that can, again, inform what we do moving forward. It's an important look back, what we did good, what we did bad, and how we can improve our systems, processes, our backups, our everything that we need to ensure that we are ready in case we face a future pandemic of this scale.
Mm-hmm. Listen, I'm all for everything. You know, I want to look mm-hmm. back on what happened in the nursing homes, want to talk about what happened in schools, the fact that
exactly.
people lost their businesses. This was, you know, this was catastrophic for New York. And as you mentioned, you know, one of, if not the hardest state. Now, what are the obstacles that you face? You know, I know that there are a lot of, you know, steps that you have to make to bring these bills forward and mm-hmm. you know, they can get vetoed. Tell me, you know, where we are in that process.
Well, right now we have the bill introduced in the state assembly and the state Senate, which is great. As you mentioned, my bill is bipartisan, which is a really important, you know, effort to show that this is an effort to really not punish people, but really uplift the lessons learned and to create a important path forward. It's also very transparent. It would allow for published reports that are available to the public. Again, transparency is very, very important to me. And right now it is in the Committee of Government Operations. We are in the midst of our budget fight, so we are hoping that there can be money allocated to this commission, but ultimately we hope to at least move the legislation, and if money needs to be allocated in the future, we could do that. But essentially, it's just critical to not get too far from the pandemic. And I would argue, you know, we all have to continue to be careful. We're not out of this completely. We're certainly better than we were 4 years ago. But, you know, we want to not get too far from the height of the pandemic to be able to garner those lessons learned and create a plan forward. And again, the transparency of that plan is so critical. So we have a lot of momentum, but and a lot of support. Groups like Reinvent Albany, the Empire Center for Public Policy, Common Cause New York, the League of Women Voters of New York State, the New York Public Interest Research Group. These are diverse group of good government organizations at various spectrums of political ideology, but they're all calling to get this bill passed and funded and actualized.
Wouldn't this be great if we could all come together, no matter who you voted for, and do this for the good of New York, the good of the country, and not be viewed as political? I mean, you know,
exactly.
That would be a beautiful thing. And, you know, I have to be honest here. March 25th, the anniversary of that order, which came out and was signed by the former governor and the health department to put what we know now is over 9,000 sick patients into nursing homes. Mm-hmm. You know, on that anniversary, I was asked to come to Albany and, you know, have kind of a rally to remind people of that. And it was by the Republicans. And I said to them, mm-hmm. I would love to come, but I would like to see some Democrats. This has always been bipartisan for me, no matter where I work, no matter who you think I voted for. I want to see both people on the side of the aisles come together. And they were like, okay, well, we respect that, you know, maybe next time. And I thought, I am furious at you. I'm furious at you, GOP. You could have had an opportunity for me to be there to use my voice and my platform to talk about this. But then you said, no, this is just going to be our party, or this is going to be our, you know, soapbox. That makes me really angry. And that's why, you know, people like you coming on to talk about this, wanting this to be bipartisan, is so important.
Yep. Listen, I'm a left-leaning progressive Democrat. And I believe that public health knows no partisan lines. Science knows no partisan lines, and or shouldn't. And certainly the well-being of New Yorkers should know no partisan lines. This is about the well-being of New Yorkers. This is about science. This is about public health. This is about creating a plan forward. And I have to say, you know, Governor Hochul has really supported a lot of public health issues. She just signed a bill and actualized a really important bill on reproductive health that expanded birth control access to people who are uninsured. There's a lot of really good public health measures moving forward. This is another public health measure to look back, to assess, to learn from our mistakes, to lift up the good things we did, and to, you know, actualize that into policy and planning for the future, and to ensure that we're prepared again for the, hopefully not ever, yeah, but the potentiality of another pandemic or a crisis of this scale. We must be ready, and we must take the lessons of the past to learn for the future.
Don't go anywhere. We'll have more of the Janice Dean podcast right after this.
I'm Charles Payne. Listen to my Unstoppable Prosperity podcast so I can get you making money right now. Whether stocks are hitting new all-time highs or in freefall mode, opportunities abound. So why are so many potential investors still sitting on the sidelines? In a new season of my podcast, I'm going to get you in the game. After 38 years on Wall Street, I'm ready to impart some lessons and get you invested in the greatest wealth-generating machine in history. Listen anytime, everywhere at foxbusinesspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
You talked about the good, and I also want to talk about, you know, those people that were there with my loved ones for their last breath. You know, the nurses, the ones who don't make a lot of money, but for some reason they have a calling to be with the elderly and sit with them. They, we haven't talked enough about those people. You know, I pray at night that there was a good woman or man holding my father-in-law's hand and my mother-in-law's hand in the hospital. And we have to highlight those people that came in regardless of how dangerous it was to help others. And I worry about them too. I worry that they haven't had their voices heard. So, you know, I think that's another reason why we kind of need to highlight, you know, all the things that went wrong, but also put a spotlight on those that really went above and beyond what everyone was doing.
Exactly. We can't just, you know, be out and clapping and banging pots and pans. We have to provide the support, the resources, and again, the adequate planning for the safety and well-being of our hospital workers, whether they were the janitors putting their lives at risk, or the doctors and the nurses, or the interns or residents. I mean, there's an ecosystem that helped people survive this tragic pandemic, but also, you know, held families as you know, the awful news of loss happened. And again, over 80,000 New Yorkers were lost. And I think what's important to underscore is that if we are able to get this bill passed and signed into law, there will be public hearings. There will be public meetings. Again, this is about transparency. This is about engagement. And it's about underscoring these stories and these lives that were lost to make sure that we're adequately prepared for the future. And again, take these lessons, these stories, painful stories. And again, there was a lot of good that came out of it, and many policies that we should keep in place. But certainly a lot of mistakes were made, and we want to learn from those mistakes. And I really want to underscore, this is about learning and preparing for the future.
Mm-hmm. And I think it also sort of exposed, you know, the things that were missing, especially in elder care. You know, it kind of really got us to look under the floorboards here and realize that the system doesn't work in a lot of ways. And we have to, you know, in some cases, not repair, but even completely destroy and build up again, because it's just been going downhill for so long when it comes to senior care and taking care of our elderly. Because you know what, you and I are going to be that age at some point too, and I worry about our future. I mean, this is a big undertaking, and the first steps again would be to look back. And I think, you know, I've been very critical of Kathy Hochul because she did take us into a meeting at the very beginning. My husband was there, I was there, a couple of families, and she looked at us in the eye and said, I want to get to the bottom of this. I want to have an investigation. I want to make sure that your loved ones didn't die in vain. And because we have gone now 4 years, and even though there was this well-intentioned Olson group, whatever it's called, investigation, a commission that, you know, they'll go in and look at it. There's no subpoena power, which, of course, would really, like you said, give teeth to an investigation, which you're proposing in your bill. And I think if Kathy Hochul came out and said, I am going to pass this bill, I do want transparency, I do want to see everything that went on, the good, the bad, and the ugly, there would be some forgiveness. But because we haven't seen that yet, it's very frustrating. So that's why I appreciate someone like you, who's doing this work, who's trying to do better, who's trying to pass legislation to, you know, because if we don't have an after action review, then this will happen again at some point. And it's going to happen again.
Yeah. And you know, I appreciate that the governor's, you know, contracted a group, but it doesn't allow for the kind of access that we're all looking for, that transparency, that subpoena power. They just don't have it. So that's why I think, you know, we could take that review and it'll be additive to the commission. It could certainly help inform the commission, but the commission, again, would have the power, the teeth the capacity to really dig deeper, where the Olson Group is unfortunately very limited, so because they don't have that subpoena power. And, you know, we don't know what's going to happen of the report, whether it's going to be available to the public. I hope it will be, but we don't yet know. So, again, this commission is spelled out clearly in the legislation to create this commission with these appointments, people of these high expertise in public health, to have these hearings, to have these meetings all publicly facing, and then offer an interim report and then a final report that's also public facing. Because the public deserves to know, again, the lessons learned, the processes for moving forward, and to come up with a plan so that we're ready.
Do you think people want to look back? I feel like we went through such trauma that sometimes people just want to move forward, right? I understand that. I get it. But for people that lost loved ones and want answers, you know, we do want to look back. So, you know, what are you hearing? What do you see?
I agree. It's a very, very dark time. And again, we're not fully out of it. In fact, COVID cases and COVID deaths are continuing to rise in my neighborhood, which has been the epicenter of the pandemic. We're actually doing a vaccine clinic soon to make sure that folks who may not have gotten their additional shots and the new regimens that they can get if they wish for free. But it's been a very dark time for our state, and I completely understand people want to move forward, but we cannot allow these lives lost in vain without taking the necessary, hard, painful look back to, again, ensure that we're prepared for the future, that we have all the tools and resources necessary, the stockpiles that we'll need to make sure they're not expired, or that we have enough ventilators, or that we have, like, all those lessons from that time that we were scrambling, that needs to be documented and included in a robust plan for the future. And it requires us to take this hard, difficult look back. And it is going to be painful, but I think it's necessary for the good of New Yorkers.
Yes. And then we can start healing, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
I feel like there hasn't been healing for so many of us, because there's still like all of these questions we have. Now, listen, how can people raise their voices? How can people support this bill? How can we make the governor, take notice that we, the people, want to see this happen?
I always say to take and harness your pain into policy. I recently got hit by a car, and I've always been an advocate of safe streets.
Oh,
but
sorry.
Certainly having, yes, I was a pedestrian and got hit on a left turn. But certainly becoming a statistic made me a more vociferous advocate for street safety. And obviously losing loved ones from the pandemic makes, you know, all New Yorkers, right? I think we all know someone that we loved who have been lost or you know, have been facing long COVID. That's a real condition that have really harmed so many people's ability to live full, healthy lives moving forward. So we have to turn that pain into policy change. We have to advance solutions that are for the good of New Yorkers, that address public health problems as a public health solution, and really ensure that we're gathering these stories to ensure that we don't lose loved ones in the future. So again, it is very, very difficult to look back to relive these memories. But I think taking that pain, that trauma, that harm that many of us experiencing, and harnessing that for change, for the good, is the best that we can do for our loved ones that we lost.
Can we go to a website? Can we write our name down anywhere? What do we do?
Oh, so go to, in the assembly, go to nyassembly.gov. The bill number is A8053. Look at who's a co-sponsor. We got a good number of co-sponsors, bipartisan. If your assembly member is not on it, please reach out to them. Ask them to support A8053. And same thing in the Senate. Go to the Senate page, which is nysenate.gov. The Senate version is S as in Sam, 8168. It's Senator Julia Salazar. And, you know, get your senator's on the bill as well. Everyone has a state assembly member and a state senator, and to raise awareness about the bill and why it's so important. And particularly if you have a story that's very deeply personal to you, I think that's an important thing to share. So please encourage those members to sign on to the bill, but also call the governor and, you know, say this is really important. We appreciate the first steps of a Olson Group review, but this would provide the full teeth and capacity to really, really dig deep and advance the solutions that we need for the future.
Well, you know, you've got my support. And
thank you.
And it brings tears to my eyes because I know it gets mired in politics, and it really, I'm just grateful. I'm just grateful to you and all those that support this. And, you know, to be continued, whatever you need, you know, I'm here.
Thank you, Janice. And again, my heart goes out to your family. And thank you for being such an advocate for the health of New Yorkers, and particularly those older adults who, you know, we need to make sure that we're providing the resources and health services. Health has been my number one priority. I come from the reproductive justice movement. I've been fighting for equitable access to health care for all New Yorkers. And again, we have to do everything in our power to make sure that our communities are healthy. If COVID taught us anything, it taught us that the health of our neighbors, the health of our families, the health of our community are inextricably linked.
That's right. And that shouldn't have a political party. So
exactly.
I appreciate that. I appreciate you. Thank you so much for your time today, and to be continued, my friend.
Thank you, Janice.
Thank you again to Assemblymember Jessica Gonzalez-Rojas for being here today to discuss the bill she is sponsoring and supporting. And I am urging lawmakers and all New Yorkers to join together and support the passing of Pandemic Response Study Commission, Act A 8053 and S 8168. I'm grateful to both Assemblymember Jessica Gonzalez-Rojas and the Senate sponsor, Julia Salazar of Brooklyn, for sponsoring this bill. Because there have been proposals and well-intentioned hearings in the past, but I pray that this one makes it past the finish line. Thank you to all of my listeners. If you have someone you think should make the Dean's List, let me know at Janice Dean on Twitter or Janice Dean FNC on Instagram. Or you can rate this podcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review to this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or at foxnewspodcast.com. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.